Peter, let's pick up the timeline now where Yusuf is really trying to topple the World Trade Center, and he's scheming with his bomb machine, and he's got his group together, and he's ready to go. Go ahead.
And he's got he's building a 1,500-pound urea nitrate fuel oil device that is going to be planted under the B2 level of the Trade Center.
And how big is that if you looked at it?
Well, it occupied an entire Yellow Rider van, the famous Yellow Rider van.
That sounds familiar.
Which we'll get to the Oklahoma City parallels later, but it's extraordinary. Anyway, so he's building this device, and as I said, the FBI had multiple opportunities to discover the plot, and they failed to follow Abu Lima and Salem. If they had, they would have gone right to where Yusuf was. In fact, at one point, he's literally, George, talking through Otisville Federal Prison to Ajaj, the guy that came into the Palestinian that came in with him. They're patching the calls through Ajaj's uncle Abu's burger joint in Texas. In other words, he's calling out to Texas from the prison to this burger joint, and the uncle is calling Yusuf on a payphone in New Jersey. And Yusuf is asking Ajaj if he can get his manuals back, his bomb manuals back, because he has a technical question.
Oh.
And George, I'm not kidding you when I tell you that a judge named Rena Raji, who's going to show up later in this story, Judge Rena Raji grants his request to get his bomb manuals back. I am not kidding you.
Idiots.
And a U.S. assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Brooklyn is saying, Judge, this man, the Mossad is telling us he's a member of Al Fatah. He's a terrorist. Why are we doing this? Well, we don't have definitive proof, says Judge Raji, and she grants him the request, but by a stroke of luck or the act of God, the manuals don't go back. They're held at the FBI, but they could have. This is the point.
But obviously, it didn't matter. But.
In
well,
any case,
maybe
Yusuf,
it did.
Right.
Yeah,
so Yusuf is able to perfect this device. And now, this is very important. The morning of February 26, 1993, this is a month into Clinton's presidency, they drive the van on the B2 level. Yusuf's original thought was he was going to send Tower 1 collapsing into Tower 2. He wanted a Hiroshima-like event. He wanted thousands dead. And it was only, again, a matter of not a bomb design, but a placement. Because if he had put that bomb, George, by the seawall, the 3-inch-foot-thick bathtub of concrete that the Trade Center sat in, the Hudson River would have poured into Lower Manhattan, and it would have been a catastrophe beyond any measure. But as it happened, when the bomb went off, 6 people were killed, including a woman who was pregnant, Monica Smith, who was in an office nearby, and 1,000 people were injured, and 4 stories of 11-inch-thick rebarred concrete were blown out. And Yusuf, that escaped immediately and went to Kennedy Airport and is waiting in the first-class lounge of Pakistan Airlines to get out. Now listen to this.
And he's upset, too, because he wanted this thing to topple over, right?
Right. He's upset, and he's also angry that the FBI is saying Serbian terrorists have done this, Serbian terrorists. And Channel 2 is the only TV station on the air because the other ones had their transmitters on top of the tower. They're on the Empire State Building. So he's in this lounge at Kennedy Airport, and we now know that he called Nidal Ayad, the Rutgers grad, who originally had typed on his computer the letter taking credit. They mailed these letters as they were exiting the Trade Center, and they later were sent to the New York Times, etc., claiming credit. And he called his group the 5th Battalion of the Liberation Army. Now listen to this, George. This is something I discovered that was in the federal court case that almost no one knew. Nidal Ayad typed a coda to the letter that Yusuf phoned in from the airport, and he intended to send out this new updated letter. And the coda said, "We know what we did wrong. We will return to finish the job," in so many words. Yusuf, in 1993, and the FBI had this letter within a matter of days of the bombing, predicting a return to New York to attack the World Trade Center again.
Now, did these people all know and work with Osama bin Laden at that time?
Absolutely. Then you'd never know it if you read the 9/11 Commission report, but my evidence shows, and not just my evidence, U.S. versus bin Laden. Remember I talked earlier about this guy, Al Fadl, who had been, had worked at the mosque in Brooklyn. He'd worked for the murdered Mustafa Shalabi. He went to Afghanistan. He's training in these camps. He's literally, George, in the guest house that he says the night bin Laden came up with the idea for Al-Qaeda, he swore a bio, which is an Islamic oath, just like a mob soldier, a made guy, swearing oath to this new group called Al-Qaeda. And this guy, Al-Fadl, was the linchpin. And the FBI had him in 1996, and he described the exact, you know, origin of Al-Qaeda all the way through the New York cell, all the way up. And he testified February of 2001, how many months before 9/11 did this come out in a federal trial? So this case goes all the way back to 1989 and bin Laden. Believe me, bin Laden funded. In fact, it would later reveal that bin Laden contributed $20,000 to Nasser's defense, the guy who killed Rabbi Kahane. We now know Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Youssef's uncle, participated in the World Trade Center bombing. The blind sheikh was at the key to at the center of it. So clearly this is bin Laden. Now, listen to this. This is the night of the bombing now. They're pulling their hair out. What are we going to do? How are we going to solve this? And Mary Jo White is the new U.S. attorney. She's running around the office of Jim Fox, the head of the FBI office in New York. And they're all going, oh, my God, Serbians. And Lou Napoli and Antisev, these two agents who knew about Salem, kind of elbow each other. And Louis says, well, we had a guy. And she's, and Mary Jo stopped. What do you mean you had a guy? You had a guy inside? Yeah, we had this guy, Salem. Well, get him in here, she says. Well, I don't know if he's going to want to come in. You know, he's probably going to want like $1 million because of the way we treated him.
And they gave him $500 a week before that?
They gave him $500 a week. But listen to this, George. They recruited him back. He agreed to wear a wire this time, and they paid him $1.5 million to do what he could have done in the fall of 92 for $500 a week. And in 3 months, he rounded up the blind sheikh in the bridge and tunnel plot and became the government's linchpin witness in the conviction of the sheikh and nine others in this bridge and tunnel plot.
Where is Salem now? He's got to be under a witness.
He went into witness protection. But an even better question is, what happened to Special Agent Nancy Floyd, who recruited him? Did she get a corner office in the Hoover Building for recruiting what was arguably the greatest asset in the history of the war on terror to that date? No. You know what happened, George? She got set up in a 5.5-year OPR, which is an internal affairs investigation by the Bureau. 5.5 years, they leaked a story to the Washington Post, the temptress and the spy, falsely alleging that she was having an affair with Salem, which she absolutely was not. And this poor woman, who should have been celebrated, was penalized and eventually suspended for 2 weeks. Why? Insubordination to Carson Dunbar, the guy who screwed up, who was the management guy who could have stopped the World Trade Center bombing, and she gets put on the street. And what happened to Dunbar? He was appointed head of the New Jersey State Police, and they used an obscure federal law to allow him to continue to get his federal pension while drawing a ghost employee salary with the ATF in Washington while he runs the New Jersey State Police.
Typical.
All of this is documented in my book, A Thousand Years for Revenge.